five. At least we have five right now. We're in Proverbs chapter 31 this evening as we continue our sermon series through building strong homes. Obviously, Proverbs chapter 31, you should know what we've been dealing with tonight. At least we'll be dealing with ladies. Men, we've talked to you for two straight messages, but that doesn't mean you get the night off, all right? Even as we're doing so, I must ask, what is it that our society really views as a woman to be exalted and honored and praised? Each year we witness, I say we very loosely because I've never actually witnessed this, but I know it happens, the coronation of a Miss America. And again, I say we rather loosely because I can't say I've ever actually watched that, but I can still tell you the words to the beginning of that song, right? Maybe you can too. There she is, Miss America. What's the next line? There she is, your ideal is actually the next line, which I must ask, what is the ideal? Like, what does an ideal woman look like? And I don't know if it's Miss America. I kind of don't think it is. But what is the ideal? And Proverbs chapter 31 certainly sets up the ideal woman. And we are not told at Proverbs chapter 31, we'll be beginning our reading here in a moment in verse 10, we're not told her age, what she looks like, or anything really of that nature, but we are told how remarkable she is. And Proverbs chapter 31 sets out for us, by example, a woman that, as you begin to read it, is good at literally everything. It's pretty remarkable. In fact, it seems that she does everything so well, you may read it and believe she inches dangerously close to being a workaholic. I could see, though, there's several dangers that whether you're a male or a female, you could fall into as you're about to read Proverbs chapter 31. I could see two of those. Number one, I fear that a man who seeks to find a woman that measures exactly up to Proverbs 31 will likely never marry. All right? I could see that as being in danger because you read this and you go, I've never met a woman like this, and for that matter, I've never met a man either. I mean, this is unbelievable. And number two, I fear that on the other side of the coin, I fear that those women who try to compare themselves to Proverbs 31 maybe have overwhelming feelings of guilt or inadequacy because there's no way they think they could ever meet this standard. So lest either of those happen, we need to explain a couple key observations about this text, which will help us not only in Proverbs 31, but honestly anytime we open to the book of Proverbs. And a few important observations about Proverbs chapter 31. Number one, the description of the woman in Proverbs 31 is carefully composed. And I ask you to remember this observation and keep this observation in mind because we'll actually come back to it very importantly at the end of the message, though I'll save that as if it's a radio tease for the end. This is a note that's not, by the way, written out of love by a forgetful husband that forgot the anniversary and now he has to jot down a note, right? This is not one of those. Each measure of this proverb is very carefully written down. And I'll give you one thing, and then I'll save the other for later. One thing that's really fascinating about this proverb, you may not immediately notice in English, is that in Hebrew, of course, this is a poem. This is from the book of poetry. And this form of poetry in Hebrew, there's two, I'll give you one. This is an acrostic. What I mean by that is every verse we're about to read begins a new letter in the Hebrew alphabet. So it will begin with Aleph, then go to Beth, then Gimel, and so on, which is pretty remarkable, even within any realms of poetry. So again, this is Solomon writing. He's a wise man, and he demonstrates that wisdom even in how carefully he composes this poem. And number two, the description of the woman in Proverbs 31 is, in fact, idealistic. Remember, this is a proverb. Proverbs set out idealistic standards, which are very different than models. She is immensely talented with abilities as a mother, businesswoman, investor, farmer, manufacturer, entrepreneur, and so on, to name a few. I know of very few women, or men for that matter, who would possess all of those talents equally. This means that the woman of Proverbs 31 is not necessarily a standard by which we should measure a woman. Women should certainly not feel guilty if they don't do everything this woman did. It's an idealistic standard, and idealistic standards are not bad, but it is a proverb, and it's very important for us to understand that when we read a proverb that we're not reading from, say, the book of James or something else in the New Testament. This is a proverb. And thirdly, the description of the women in Proverbs 31 is actually primarily written to men. You think that's kind of interesting, but it is. I'll explain that in a moment, even at the end as well, even more in detail. But this is not a poem written by a husband to his wife, but rather, this is a poem written by a father to his son, encouraging his son to cherish a godly woman. And while this proverb may certainly inspire the ladies who read it, it's actually written from a father to inspire his son to respect ladies. And hopefully none of us will have those dangers that I mentioned at the beginning as we make those very key, important observations. And therefore, I think a sermon based on this passage of Scripture should seek to accomplish, as we get into it, three things. Number one, it should inspire women to fear the Lord and be like this woman in the way that she fulfilled her role as best that they possibly can with the talents that God has possessed them with. Number two, it should inspire others, especially husbands and children, to praise women who do fear the Lord. And finally, it should contain the praise of godly women anytime you read this passage. What does this passage say, though? It says in verse 10, it says this: "Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will go do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant's ships. She bringeth forth her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night and giveth her meat to her household and her portion to her maidens. She considereth a field and buyeth it with the fruit of her hands and planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivers girdles into the merchants. She strength and honor are in her clothing. She shall rejoice in the time to come. She opened her mouth with wisdom, and her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her. Her many daughters have done virtually, but thou excellest and exceedest them all. Favor is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates." Proverbs 31 sets out an important truth, and that is a truth that will title our message and our lesson tonight, lesson 6 in this series, Through the Home, and that is a message on the heart of the home, because godly women are, in fact, the heart of the home. Without godly women, their work, their influence, and their abilities, we would actually have to shut this church down, and we would have to declare the home to be an unfit place for anybody to live. The message I'm going to preach then today is not designed at all to put women down, because that's not at all what this proverb is doing. Instead, this proverb is designed to build them up and put them on a pedestal, and it's specifically designed to show husbands and children and families how important women are. What does God say, then, a woman should be like? The kind of woman that God finds valuable, first of all, is very hard to find. He says in verse 10, "Who can find a virtuous woman? Her price is far above rubies." I almost thought about titling that message that. Her price is far above rubies. And we have, though, in this series, sought to talk about the fact that God has designed men to lead and be the heads of their family, and that is true. But here in Proverbs, we've noted that God has designed that women become the heart of the home. I had a different proposition, and my wife corrected me. She was right to do so. I was going to say godly women are the backbone of a godly home and church, and that would have communicated, I think, the point, right? Men the head, women are the backbone. I thought that was good. My wife said, no, it's much more loving and to say the heart of the home. So I appreciate my wife correcting me there and saying godly women are the heart of the home. I actually texted my dad, and it's the same proposition, and he said the same thing. You should change backbone to heart. So both of those were thinking the same way. So godly women are the heart of a godly home. And I want to take this passage that's written in praise of godly women and show together five treasures, as we've noted in verse 10, rubies, that are shown that make this godly woman of character so immensely valuable. The first thing we know is that a woman of godly value is known by her character as a wife. What stands out about her, first of all, is her trustworthiness. Notice how this passage begins its descriptions of this lady. It doesn't start by describing her specifically, but instead it describes the interactions of her husband with her. And it says this in verse 11, "The heart of her husband does safely trust in her." The first thing we note about her character is she is trustworthy. Her husband has absolute confidence in her integrity, her discretion, her wisdom, and her care of the home, in her purchasing of needs for the home. The text says in verse 12, she will do him good and not evil. She always does what is best for her spouse and for her home. She puts the best interest of her home first. She builds them up. In fact, this psalm puts an interesting note in verse 12. It says she does this all the days of her life. Her love for him is based on such high spiritual principles that does not fluctuate on the circumstances of life, which we all know can be difficult. It continues on. There's an underlying virtue of her character then that is noted immediately in verses 11 through 12. The character of a godly woman and the character of any godly person is that of selflessness. And that is set out right at the beginning, and as you understand that to be her character, you come to realize as you begin to read all the other things that she does, certainly all of them are wrapped up in a character of selflessness. She does all these things to demonstrate herself to be a trustworthy, selfless, virtuous price far above rubies because she is the heart of the home. And that kind of becomes the cornerstone then of the next four that we'll spend more time in. So a godly woman of value is known, first of all, by her character as a wife. And number two, a woman of godly value is known by her devotion to the home. This lady takes her responsibilities as a homemaker very seriously. Now, being a homemaker is not a popular thing today. In fact, Vivian Gornick, you probably don't know who she is. She teaches feminism at the University of Illinois. She is famous for quoting and saying, "Being a housewife is an illegitimate profession." That is a tragic take. I prefer what John MacArthur says. He says this on his message on Proverbs 31. He says, "I always thought being a prostitute was an illegitimate profession. But in our day, being a housewife is an illegitimate profession. Frankly, the most cruel and certainly the most damaging sexual harassment is the sexual harassment by feminists and their government allies against the role of motherhood and the role of the dependent wife. That's real sexual harassment with devastating results." Proverbs 31 begins to know after verse 12, noting that this is a woman of character, that this is a woman who's known by her devotion to the home. And in God's economy, the homemaker has an exalted role that is priced far above rubies. What does she do? Well, she gives her talents to build the home. She labors, she shops, she cooks, she keeps the home. She's a giver of the abilities that God has graced her with, and her family benefits from those gifts. Look at verse 12. "She will do him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax, worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She bringeth her food from afar off. She plans things out. She budgets. She rises also while it is yet night." So she's an early riser. "She giveth meat to her house. She also portions out work to her maidens." What that means is she's not only managing the children, she also apparently here manages others that are working for her. She's a boss. She considers a field and she buys it with the fruit of her hands. She plants a vineyard. You may wonder, so how did this purchasing going on? Well, it already said the heart of her husband trusts in her. She saw a need, something that needed to be purchased. She went out. She did all of the work, all the investigation, and she was the one that purchased it. And she's actually the one that began to plant. And this is a strong lady. She girds her loins with strength. She strengthens her arms. I'm tired just reading all that she does. She's a talented lady. More than that, she gives of her time to build the home. Did you notice that? She takes care of the necessary details of the home. Again, she rises early, the Proverbs say. She works late. She tends the needs of her children and her husband and others that may work in her household. She is there when they are hungry. She is there when they are sick. She's there when they are broken. She's even there when other people not in her home are in need. We'll cover that in a moment. There's really no place for laziness and or inactivity in this passage. I don't even know if there's place for sleep. She's so full of activity and energy in her home, she puts everybody else to shame with her work ethic. I did say at the beginning of this point that being a homemaker is somewhat frowned upon in our society. And while that may be somewhat true, I'm encouraged to note that's not necessarily the case anymore. In fact, staying home as a mother has always been a little bit of a challenge, but it's become to actually come back. In 1967, it is reported that 49% of American moms were stay-at-home mothers, 49%. That number dipped to its lowest point in 1999. In 1999, only 23% were. But from 1999, the lowest mark ever, it has risen increasingly every year since then. Today, almost 32% of moms are stay-at-home mothers working from home. I am actually remarkably thankful for those, because they show, at least in part, that our culture recognizes that there is an elevated role in the homemaker. And I can also prove it to you even in those that work in the workplace, because in 1967, and even to some extent in 1999, there wasn't much of a maternity leave given to moms that would have a child, and now there is. So our culture has recognized this is an important thing, and so as much as sometimes we as Christians, and unfortunately so, we do a bad job at this, can frown at the culture and say, how could they? At least in part here, we're beginning to see a bringing back of what is an elevated role. She is the ruler of the house, as Proverbs says. She's the manager of the house. She is full of energies. She is the heart of the home. But this woman, even though she should be treated as a queen by her husband and children, is not at all lazy. She really manages the home. She's entrepreneurial, too. Notice the independence in which she governs. She considered the field, and she was the one that bought it. She considers it. She thought it through. She made the purchase, and she does that because she's a woman of character who devoted her time and talents to her home. That's an amazing accomplishment. There's something else valuable about this lady. A woman of godly value is known by her neighborly generosity. To love that lady is to love someone that loves a lot of people. In fact, her love is so bubbling out of her, it extends beyond the four walls of her home. Look at verse 20, it says, she extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. And notice something about it. It isn't that they come to her with their needs. It's that she goes to them. She demonstrates not only a special devotion to her home, but a compassion to those who are not fortunate enough to be in her home. She demonstrates to the poor and unfortunate that have real needs, and she really reaches out to try to meet those needs. My dad, I never had the privilege of meeting my grandmother on my dad's side, my dad's mom. My dad's mom passed away before I was born, and she passed away when my oldest sister was being born. My oldest sister's name is also Rachel. That's not too confusing for those that have an Aunt Rachel on the same side of the family, my wife and my sister. But my sister's name is Rachel June. Her middle name is after my dad's mom. My dad would say, he'll say often, that he remembers growing up, my dad's dad was a pastor, he remembers growing up not wanting to sit with his mom at church for one specific reason. He says his mom was really good at having the weirdest people sit next to her. And he felt like, as especially a junior high and teenage boy, he'd be embarrassed because his mom always had, you know, if there was even a homeless person that was down the street, she would bring him to church and have her sit right with her. And my dad said repeatedly, as a teenager or junior higher, I was embarrassed by all of the people my mom would have sitting next to her. Of course, as he matured and he grew in his walk with the Lord, he began to realize his mom was demonstrating Proverbs 31. She extends her hand to the poor. She is known by this. She is marked by this. This is what she is. And when this passage says she extends her hand to the poor, it means she gets involved in their life. She provides for what they need. Maybe it was food. Maybe it was money. Maybe it was a cloak. She stretches out her hand, and she does her best to meet that need. I remember growing up, we grew up in New Hampshire. When people go on vacation in the winter, they come here. You know what I'm saying? And so when it was up in New Hampshire, oftentimes during the Christmas season in particular, it could be a ghost town because everybody's trying to get down to Florida, right? Or, you know, get somewhere warm. And we would stay behind. Sometimes we visit family, but often we would stay behind. And there would be people, or Thanksgiving and Christmas, that didn't have any family, right? And I honestly remember very, very few Christmas Eves or Thanksgiving dinners where my mom didn't have somebody in our church that was maybe a social outcast, just a little bit odd, someone that didn't have any friends or family, and they were always at our Thanksgiving table. They were always there for Christmas Eve. I could even say in my own mom's life, she is an utterly selfless woman, not only in the walls of her own house, but also in her reaching out to those about her that she may influence. She's constantly thinking of new ways that she can expand her horizons. The best greeters ministry in the church, then, is a Proverbs 31 lady. Why? Because she's the heart of the home. She's the heart of the church. This is a remarkable lady. This is a lady of true reverence. And fourthly, this is a valuable thing, a woman of godly value is known by her influence as a teacher. It's here that her wisdom puts on a pair of shoes and starts to walk around. And the next verse sets aside quite a remarkable and high standard. It says in verse 25, "Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in the time to come." I start there, even though we're not yet talking about teaching, because verse 25 is the platform upon which her teaching duties take place. She is clothed with spiritual character. I actually appreciate the NASB, which is a really, maybe a clunky but literal translation of the Septuagint. It says, "Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future." What does that word dignity or honor mean? It refers to the fact that she is elevated above common things. Her life is not all about what doesn't matter. She has true class and true virtue, and she is spiritually strong, that she is motivated and elevated herself above common things to nobler things so that she can smile at the future. She has no fear. Why? Because she knows her life is God's and in God's hand. And as a woman of godly character, now this overflows into her teaching. So based on this spiritual strength, based on virtue, having elevated her thoughts above common, mundane, trivial things, her teaching now becomes very spiritual. Notice the next verse, 26. She opens her mouth in wisdom. And notice how she speaks in this wisdom in verse 26. And in her tongue is the law of kindness. She guides her family daily, including her husband, with words of wisdom, which are as if they're flowing from the law of God, because she's not wrapped up in fear of trivial things that may cause others to worry. She's not a worrier. She smiles at the future. This is a lady that has clear confidence. Proverbs 31 woman, then, is one that has elevated herself to a spiritual level that she is not familiar with worrying. She is familiar with the concept of meditating on those things which are pure and noble. And by virtue of that, when she opens her mouth to begin talking, she's been thinking about spiritual things all day. So when she starts talking, what do you think is going to come out of her mouth? Spiritual things. I love the element, though, of poetic weaving the author of Proverbs draws on here. He actually hearkens our attention back to the beginning of his book. Proverbs 31, of course, is the penultimate chapter of Proverbs. But the first chapter of Proverbs introduces us to who this book is for. And that's what I kind of tipped my hand to at the beginning. Who is this particular chapter for? And never, notice in Proverbs chapter 1, he says this, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother." What he's saying is basically this. A father's place can be the formal teaching. And they can do that to a good degree. And we've encouraged for two messages fathers to do that. But you know where sons and daughters learn more? They learn more from mom. Because they see that on a daily basis. And so even at the beginning of Proverbs, he says that. And now in his penultimate chapter, he comes back to that. And he says, your mom, this gracious lady, has taught you and regulated you with speech from a noble woman who has elevated her thoughts beyond the trivial. She's not a worrier. She's a spiritual woman. She's the heart of the home. Now, we've only covered four, but I'm already exhausted. She's a lady of character. She is devoted to her home. She's neighborly in her generosity. She's influential as a teacher, but there's still one more. A woman of godly value is known by her effectiveness as a mother. We've seen her as a wife. We've seen her as a homemaker. We've seen her as a neighbor. We've seen her as a teacher. But now, Proverbs elevates her status as a mother. And again, these are all the ideals of a woman. He says in verse 27, "She looketh well to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness." No kidding. Her children then rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. According to this verse, she exercises careful surveillance over everything. She manages the children, she manages the household, and she is not lazy.
known by her devotion to the home. She's known by her neighborly generosity, by her influence as a teacher, by her effectiveness as a mother. And at the outset of today's message, I said something very important about this proverb that I knew I was going to bring your back to your attention, so I said, remember this point. I said, the description of the woman in Proverbs 31 is very carefully composed. And I made that point by saying that, one, it's an acrostic. An acrostic means that each verse is a new letter of the Hebrew alphabet. But I've been doing some study, and I actually tipped my hand to Brenda. She was helping me do this. She likes some of these language stuff. And so we're looking at this together. And there's a really cool thing about Proverbs 31. This is not just an acrostic, which is a form of poetry. This is also something called a chiasm. A chiasm is where the author structures the text in an intentional X-shaped pattern where the first and last elements parallel each other, the second and second to last, third and third to last, and so on, coming to a point in the middle, and that point is the emphasis of the whole poem. And so for a Hebrew poet, before I show it to you, for a Hebrew poet to have a poem that is both an acrostic and a chiasm is almost unheard of in any realm or any sphere, let alone in Scripture. Let me show it to you. It's pretty cool. This is from the New American Commentary series. You can see it in other commentary sets as well.
You can see the chiasm there. You can see AA and BB, and it's coming all to a head with H. And that right there is the penultimate point of the penultimate chapter of Proverbs 31. And that says public respect for her husband. Let me explain that. Of course, Proverbs 31 isn't merely an art form. It's part of God's word. So as amazing as it is that Solomon could construct such a thing, Solomon is using an art form to make a remarkable point. So what is he trying to communicate? Now remember, Proverbs was written to address a young man. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8 says, "My son, hear the instruction of your mother, and forsake or father, and forsake not the instruction or law of your mother." That's Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. But here, at the pinnacle of Proverbs, in Proverbs chapter 31, is a woman. So why do we close with her? And what happened to the son? We started with the son in Proverbs chapter 1, and now we're going to close with a woman. What happened to the son? Did he disappear? Where is he? And you look again, and you see in the penultimate chapter of Proverbs 31, the pinnacle or center of the chiasm, this verse in verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Who is this man? Well, we know he's a mature man. He's respected. He's sitting in the elders, so he's mature. He has a position of leadership. We also know that he has sons and daughters because Proverbs 31, verse 28 says he does, because they also rise up and respect his wife. May I suggest that the son of Proverbs chapter 1 is the man of Proverbs 31, verse 28. And it's a man who has made a choice. He has heard the voice of his father when his father said this in the middle of the book. This is the middle of the book. "Whoso finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor in the Lord." So everything in Proverbs points to this final emphasis on a man sitting in the gates who has chosen a wife and a life well, a man who follows the way of wisdom, God's way, and lives an honoring life, and therefore we can say that at the heart of Proverbs sits the heart of a woman. And it would be impossible for anyone, no matter who they are, to have any level of respect or honor or dignity or growth in Christ's likeness without the heart of a godly woman. It's a remarkable point that he's then making. And the penultimate chapter, in the pinnacle of this chapter, Solomon is saying, without the heart of a woman. Now, we have laid out some pretty amazing truths in all of this series, some of which are pretty difficult and hard to even grapple with because, frankly, we don't live according to these things. And I want to point out that godly women are then the heart of a godly home and a godly church. Without that factor, without that element, we'll be missing something just as important as if the man is not the leader God asked him to be. And so, far from being a decry on women, what he's saying is, both of these, husband and wife, working in unity, God creates something special. He creates a very strong home that will stand the test of time, and it's an amazing thing to consider. But even as we close, can we think for a moment who wrote Proverbs? Solomon, while wise, failed to the tune of like 800 times, right? Over and over, he couldn't get this. And now you can imagine Solomon sitting down with his son. And I guess your imagination can run wild on which son this is. Is this who